Hey there, listeners. This is Justin with a quick note before today's episode. Audible.com is offering Beyond the Uniform listeners one free audiobook. You can see this offer, as well as a list of every book guests have recommended on the show, at beyondtheuniform.io/books. That's beyondtheuniform.io/books. Thanks and enjoy the show. Welcome back to Beyond the Uniform. I'm Justin Asiri, and each week I interview military veterans about their civilian career. Today's episode number 79 with Camimela Mabee.
I would say med school is probably the single most challenging work environment period that I've ever been a part of. It's for the first year and a half, 2 years, it's nothing but lectures. You know, you're literally being just talked at for hours and hours and hours, and it's an unbelievable amount of information. It's so much stuff that they tell you right off the bat, you're never going to know everything, because that's impossible. You're just not going to know everything.
The top two reasons to listen to today's show are, number one, determination. Camilla is a case study in resolve. Her military career didn't pan out as expected. She had an unexpected medical discharge, but that didn't stop her. She wanted to go to medical school, but was an English major with no med school prerequisites. That didn't stop her either. I found her tenacity inspiring. Number two, med school. Camilla went from an unexpected medical discharge to being accepted into what U.S. News reports is one of the top 10 most competitive medical schools in the country. Camilla is very transparent about the mistakes she made in this process and how other veterans can learn from her mistakes in their medical school process. She's attending medical school on a 100% scholarship. That is a $250,000 program for free. And she started out when she was 28 years old, while the overwhelming majority of her classmates were just 23. If you're interested in medical school or the health services industry, this episode is for you. As always, at beyondtheuniform.io, you'll find the show notes for this episode with links to everything we discuss, as well as a directory of veteran resources, ebooks, and recommendations for other websites, podcasts, and books. If you're interested in any of those books, audible.com is offering Beyond the Uniform listeners a free audiobook of your choosing. You can find out more at beyondtheuniform.io/books. So with that, let's dive into my interview with Camilla Mabee. Well, joining me today in Washington, D.C. is Camilla Mabee. Camilla, welcome to Beyond the Uniform.
Hi, thank you for having me.
So, quick background for listeners. Camilla is currently in her second year of medical school at the George Washington University School of Medicine and Health Sciences. She started out at West Point, after which she served as a medical supply officer in the Army for 4 years. After separation from the Army, she worked at the UVA Health System as an administrative assistant. She holds a Master's of Science in Healthcare Administration from the University of Maryland. So, Camilla, to start off, you found yourself unexpectedly departing the Army at a much faster rate than you expected. Could you share more about how you left the Army?
Yeah, I did. So I was actually a medical discharge. And if anybody knows a whole lot about the med board process, it's that it's very unpredictable. But kind of the one thing I feel like a lot of people tend to have in common is that it can be a really lengthy process. What ended up being kind of weird for me, though, was that from the start to the end of my med board was probably about 4 months, which is extremely fast, if anybody is familiar with the process. So I kind of found myself really without a plan. I really didn't know what I was going to do, to be honest. I hadn't really given it much thought because I had, honestly, I thought I had another 6 months to a year to sort of figure all that out. So, I think I really kind of took about a grand total of 6 to 8 weeks to sort of figure out what I was going to do and what my next step was. At the time, my husband and I were living in Colorado, and I knew that there really wasn't a ton of work for me there. And I also knew that I really wasn't crazy about the whole, you know, kind of junior officer going into middle management type thing. So, sort of long story short, I kind of had to figure out that, okay, yeah, I think this med school thing might actually be what I want to do. And let me figure out a way to make this work. And kind of flying by the seat of my pants, I found a way to do it. So that was that's sort of like the short version, I guess.
And at what point did you know you wanted to become a doctor? When I was looking at your bio, I thought, you know, because you were a medical supply officer, maybe that was a long time ambition, but then you were talking about, you know, knowing that you didn't want to do middle management type positions. So what was that point when you said, I actually really want to become a doctor or enter into healthcare in some way?
Well, what's interesting is, I mean, I've always thought, you know, medicine was really interesting. But to be honest, I mean, science was never really my best subject in school. And I guess I never really thought I was the kind of person who would be a good doctor. In college, I think I had my impression of sort of like the pre-medical kids was, you know, very similar to what people see at a lot of other universities. It's this program is extremely hard and it's only for, you know, the smartest kids in the class and, you know, they weed people out and it's just, it's going to destroy your GPA unless you're the smartest person ever. So I didn't even think about it. But I did branch medical service, which, you know, is more like medical admin and medical service support type stuff, because I mean, I really did think it was that kind of work was interesting and I liked being in that environment. And I was fortunate enough to, I did work in medical supply. I was also an ambulance platoon leader. So for the majority of my time in the military, I was working in a role two military or army clinic. And so I was working with a lot of clinicians kind of side by side, mostly medics and PAs, but also some doctors and nurses. And it really did not take me very long to realize that, at least for me, like their jobs seemed so much cooler than mine. And that's, you know, I would so much rather be doing what they were doing. So that was, I mean, I kind of figured it out kind of gradually. And then I did ended up getting my master's degree in healthcare administration. And I think that is what kind of just like the straw that broke the camel's back, because I was like, this is not me. This is not what I want to do. I want to be with patients. I want to be seeing people. I want to be kind of, you know, I wanted to be a clinician.
So that was your time during Goucher College when you made that discovery. Is that right?
No, I was still in the Army.
Okay. Still in the Army. Gotcha. You did, so you went straight from the Army then to Goucher College to study pre-medicine. How did you, you know, decide on Goucher? How did you decide on studying pre-medicine and what was that process like?
Okay, well, my sort of path to Goucher was one of my, like, I don't know, I guess, delightful accidents. Let's go back to sort of me being med boarded out, right? And this is sort of the point where I was like, I don't want to do middle management. Let's, you know, I'd maybe like to go into medicine. At this point, I really wasn't sure if I wanted to be a doctor or, you know, a nurse, or I was just trying to figure out what's realistic for me. And what can I do? What can I afford? What can, you know, et cetera. And my major in college was, you know, essentially a liberal arts major. So I didn't have prerequisites for anything. So I knew that if I wanted to do anything medical, that I would have to, you know, go back to school in some capacity. So there really wasn't a ton of information, you know what I mean? Largely going off of, you know, online, you know, what I can find online, because I'd never met anyone who went back to medical school later in life. And, you know, and how you would even start the process, what you would even have to do. So I kind of just assumed, okay, I need to find a way to take, you know, chemistry and physics and orgo and take the MCAT. So I was thinking, okay, maybe I need to find a community college somewhere or nights and weekends kind of thing. It was actually my husband who, I guess, somewhere in the bowels of the internet found out about these post-bac pre-medical programs. And there really aren't that many of them, even across the country, but what essentially they are is, you know, it's a year-long undergraduate level program that sort of puts you through all of the prerequisites for medical school. They get you ready for the MCAT. They help you apply for med school. They basically hold your hand through the whole process. So I figured out, like, okay, these things exist, right? But at this point, I'm trying to think, it's the winter of 2013, and most of the application cycles had closed. And I knew I was getting out at some point that spring, and I was like, okay, well, I'd really like to maybe see if this is an option, but if I can't, you know, apply to them, what am I going to do? But I don't know, by like, hand of fate or whatever, There were two schools in particular, two schools that were arguably two of the best programs in the country. And that was Goucher College and Johns Hopkins post-bac programs that were still open for another couple weeks. So I just kind of put together what I felt like were the shoddiest application essays and called in some favors for recommendations and just sent these things in to see what would happen. Honestly thought I would never hear from these people again. But I ended up getting interviews for both of them and I got into Goucher. And so I started there in May of 2013.
I love your candor on all of this. And what I really enjoy about your story is, coming as a, cause you were an English major at West Point, right?
Yeah.
And so coming from a background, you don't typically associate with med school, just, I'm just imagining the amount of determination and effort to make such a dramatic shift from the Army. And, I just also appreciate, this was not some master plan that you had hatched at 5 years old and executed on. You know, it was just like everything in life, it was just real world circumstances playing a big role in this unexpected departure from the Army, scrambling to see what's available, and, you know, making a big leap and then landing at such an incredible med school. I think it's just a really cool example. I think it's a very inspiring example of being able to achieve so much and just while you're rolling with the punches of this unexpected departure from the Army.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I mean, it was definitely, I feel like every step of the way was certainly just incredibly chaotic. And I mean, there were so many points and, you know, I can get into it later, you know, as the questions keep coming. But I mean, there were so many points where it's like, I still wasn't even sure, like, if it was going to happen or not. So, I mean, it was very, again, and I mean, you know, and I mentioned before we started talking that I hope that if anybody can get anything out of this story, it's that, there are like set steps you can take. And I hope that, you know, nobody has to go through what I did to get to where I am. So
that's awesome. And I also wanted to ask, because it seems like you were pretty proactive in volunteer work, and I'm wondering if you could share whatever was relevant from that volunteer work with listeners, as well as any thoughts on how they might use that sort of volunteer work to prepare for med school.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I guess the most cliche answer is that, you know, I've always sort of, I come from a small town, so I mean, I kind of came from a background of I'd always volunteered in high school, and you know, and even at West Point and in the Army does a really good job of trying to involve soldiers in the community and stuff like that. But I started volunteering again at Goucher, actually. The first semester, you are required to do some kind of like volunteer work in a medical capacity for the first semester, like every week. So I started volunteering at the University of Maryland Shock Trauma Center, which I loved. It was an incredible experience. And I learned so much, for obvious reasons, that's the kind of environment you literally see like every kind of medical work being done. And so that really did kind of like reinforce that, yes, I really, really want to do this. I actually liked it so much that I stayed there for the rest of the year. And then when we moved to Charlottesville the next year so that my husband could start business school, kind of for the same reason, because I just really liked working in a medical environment. And because, you know, I was at that point just so fired up about like, yes, I really, really do want to go to med school. I really want to be a doctor. I started volunteering again at the Emily Kirk Cancer Center at UVA. So that was just, again, sort of a really wonderful way to sort of stay in a medical environment and, you know, learn as much as I could, you know, while still like, you know, getting to know people, members of the community, and kind of just feeling like I was giving back. So, you know, I mean, that was just definitely a really good experience. And I think for people who may be thinking about, you know, do I like medicine or is this what I want to do? It's a fantastic way to sort of figure out like, you know, do I like working in this environment? Do I like working with these people? Do I enjoy working with patients? I mean, it's, you know, kind of one of the easiest ways to do that.
And what was the med school application process like? And do you have any advice for veterans who are going to be applying to med school after their service?
Okay. Well, the med school application process is a process. So my biggest piece of advice is to anyone, and this is regardless of whether or not you're going to do it sort of on your own, or if you're going to do a post-bac program or, you know, or whatever, you really need to find somebody else who has done it or somebody who understands what goes into it, because it is a very unique, it's a very unique process. It's not like applying to, you know, just to college. It's not like applying to business school or to law school. I was fortunate enough in that a big part of my post-bac program, because it was geared towards, you know, students that were not from a scientific background, that probably didn't know anything about applying to medical school. They really helped us along, kind of held our hand through the whole, you know, through the whole process. But it's, you know, it's a national, there's like a, it's basically a national registry of medical schools, and you have to, you know, I mean, you have to do kind of what you would expect. Is there's, you know, there's a long application, you have to write essays, you have to get recommendations, but they're also looking for very specific things. So, I mean, they want to see that, you know, A, like, you know, do you really want to be a doctor, and does that show through in the kind of language you're using in your application, but also in like the kind of work you've done, you know, what have you done, you know, either in the community or professionally that sort of demonstrates your, you know, your drive and your ability. And then the biggest part, I think, is the interview. Medical schools, and I know this goes, it's the same for, you know, residencies and fellowships as we move on. Interviews and sort of personality are huge. Medical schools and just sort of the medical profession in general puts a huge emphasis on, you know, will this person fit in? Is this person someone who's going to work well with the culture that we have here? Because, I mean, in medicine, I mean, that's what it's all about, is, you know, you have to be able to rely on, you know, people to your left and right, because these are human lives. You can't have, you know, you have to have a really good work dynamic, and you have to really, you know, be able to trust one another. And at school, you know, they kind of run off of the same process. So it is a very, like I said, a much more potent emphasis on culture and kind of personality. So, I mean, it's like the first step is definitely, you know, you have to have good recommendations and a good application, but then it's like, once you're at the interview, it's all about the interview. So I think that's probably one of the hardest things to explain to people. Because a lot of people do think like, oh yeah, like I've applied to college, it's the same thing. It's like, no, it's not. So, yeah.
And what about the MCAT? Do you have any advice on how to prepare for that exam?
Oh boy. Yeah, the MCAT is definitely, to date, probably the hardest test I've ever taken. And I haven't taken the USMLE yet, so I know that'll probably be worse. But the MCAT is, it's, you know, it's 4 hours long. It's pretty, it's rough. It is, I mean, I don't know how many people, you know, I was not familiar at all with the MCAT. Like, I didn't even know what was on it, but it's, you know, there's basically a biology section, like a physics section, and like a verbal section. You know, at the end of the day, it's a standardized test. So, you know, it's formatted that way. It's, you know, it's a multiple choice, you know, kind of thing. It's one of these tests where you go into it knowing you're not going to know the answer to every question, but it really does require a lot of preparation. I know that people, I know who have done like a pre-med program in undergrad, literally took like 2 years to study for this thing. In the post-bac program, we essentially started studying for it on day one. And we were studying for it the entire year as we were learning the material. And so, I mean, it is a very intense experience, and you need to be ready for it. It's because it is very, very important. A lot of schools do use the scores to screen, you know, applications. And so, I mean, having a strong MCAT score is extremely important in the application process. Yes.
Are there any resources for the application process or for MCAT that you would recommend? That could be specific books or programs, or just anything that you would recommend to listeners if they're thinking of applying to med school that might help them.
I feel like, you know, most of, you know, the major testing services that you've heard of, I know like Kaplan and Princeton Review, and, you know, some other similar resources like that always run, you know, MCAT prep courses and have the materials and stuff. I didn't use any of those. So, I mean, I feel like I'm probably not the best resource there because, again, the MCAT prep was baked into my post-bac program, which is, again, and I'm probably just going to continue to push, like, if you can find a post-bac program and get into it, that's, like, probably the single best thing you can do because they really do just, again, hold your hand through the whole process. But I think if you were going to kind of do it on your own, I think most of the, you know, the major, you know, testing services out there for, you know, for any standardized tests will probably have, you know, either an in-person course or an online course that you can take. I would definitely recommend taking a course with an, you know, with either a virtual or a real, you know, person to explain, you know, to explain things. Because, I mean, like any standardized test, there's a certain way to answer these questions that, you know, isn't necessarily super straightforward. And so I think having somebody to kind of coach you through that is at least as important as, you know, knowing the material, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes a ton of sense of just having that person to guide you through the process and just kind of save you hundreds of hours of having to try and research this on your own and figure it out.
Absolutely.
And I was blown away to hear that you are on a full scholarship to medical school through the National Health Service Corps Scholarship Program. Could you share more about this program and how you managed to find that scholarship?
Yeah. So, well, again, sort of, we're going to talk about my many just ridiculous, I don't know, accidents or mistakes or whatever that I've experienced along the way. I probably wouldn't have known about it at all if I hadn't, let me back up a little bit. Since I was a medical discharge, I had been told that I would get full GI Bill benefits, right? So part of my decision to go to, you know, to go back to school and not to go to work was predicated on the fact that, you know, I thought that I wouldn't have to worry about tuition. And then I found out that, you know, over the course of like several months in going back and forth with the VA and, you know, just kind of that ridiculousness that I was not in fact eligible for any GI Bill benefits at all. So suddenly I'm, you know, on the hook for not just the, you know, the bill for Goucher, but also like, oh crap, now I have to come up with $250,000 to go to medical school, because medical school anywhere is not cheap. I mean, it's just, you know, it's just not. So I sort of went back and forth, you know, on for a lot of different reasons. And what I ended up doing was sitting in on sort of a little lecture after I was done with Goucher. And it was put on by one of the professors at Goucher, and it was kind of, you know, essentially like, here's all the ways that you can pay for medical school. You know, and there were a lot of like, okay, well, basically here's, you know, how to walk through the federal loan process. Here's all these random scholarships you can get, you know, through, you know, assorted programs. And I remember National Health Service Corps was like this footnote on one of these slides. And all I saw was like, oh, here's a way to get your entire medical school paid for. And I'm like, okay, that sounds kind of cool. And so I did a little bit of research, and it's a federally funded program that essentially pays your way through med school if you are willing to go into a primary care field. Because as you may know, there's an incredible shortage of primary care physicians in the country, and that's only going to grow as we move forward. And the primary care fields are obviously internal medicine, family medicine, pediatrics, OBGYN, and psychiatry. So as long as you're willing to say, like, I will, you know, practice one of these things, you know, and it is a competitive process. You have to, you know, apply and get recommendations and essays and interviews and all that stuff. But, you know, if you're willing to do that, then we'll pay for you to go to medical school. And you have to go into one of those fields, and then you have to practice at, or basically at in an underserved area for 5 years following graduation. And the sort of the nice / kind of scary thing about that is that there are so many underserved areas that you can, you know, I realize we can literally live wherever we want, and there will be, you know, facilities that I'd be eligible to work at. So I went ahead and applied for that before the spring/summer before I actually started medical school, and I got it. So, and that's been a huge help, you know, because they do, not only do they pay for med school, but they pay you, you know, for, they pay for all your supplies. They pay you like a living stipend. So it's been very helpful, I will say.
Yeah, that's unbelievable. And I you had said $250,000. I bet that's pretty accurate, right? That it would be $250,000 to go through this process on your own otherwise. Is that right?
Yeah, that's what GW costs, yeah.
Wow. I'm just curious, because you had mentioned before the interview about how your husband had gone to business school, and so you had deferred your acceptance to GW for a year. And then now he's working, I believe, at Bain in the DC area. So I'm just curious, with your conversation, your marriage, was it just kind of like, hey, we're going to go to this underserved area next, and I'm sure you'll find a job with Bain or with someone there when we move? Or how did you guys negotiate that?
Oh, my goodness. Well, and again, here's me being completely transparent again. a lot of this was not planned. So he got out, he left the Army the year before I did, and sort of went into like tech sales for a while, and actually lost his job while I was getting ready to go to Goucher. And so that was kind of another like not another piece of like that financial, you know, sort of ridiculous, that was a, sort of a ridiculous period, like when I was starting Goucher and we're trying to figure out how to, you know, how to pay for this, and then he loses his job, and it's like it was a very strange time. And he did end up getting another job in the Baltimore area while we were living there, and I was going to Goucher. But I guess realized he was, you know, in the process of all that, he realized that, you know, hey, I need to, you know, I don't like what I'm doing. I don't like the path that I'm going down. So I really want to go to business school. And of course he makes this decision, in that spring. And anybody who's applied to business school knows that's like round three. So, I, at that point, had already been accepted to go to GW, sort of through what is essentially an early admittance program through Goucher. So I was set to go, you know, basically roll right into medical school right after I was done with Goucher, and we were going to move to DC, and, you know, we were just going to, you know, just go with it. But, he came to me one day and said, hey, I applied to business school and I got in and I really want to go. And we did, you know, through the course of a lot of back and forth, I realized that, you know, that really would have been the best thing for him, because he got into Darden at UVA, which is mixed, you know, which is a wonderful school. And I mean, it would have, you know, it was a wonderful opportunity. And we knew that, you know, in the long run, it was just the right thing to do. But at that point, I still didn't have a way to, you know, pay for medical school. And on top of that, you know, between the two of us, we have 5 deployments. We've both lived, you know, we've been posted in different places. And so we said that, you know, hey, we really don't want to spend any more time than we have to living apart. And oh, by the way, like, you know, both of us being in school at the same time would be prohibitively expensive. And just, you know, and for a host of small reasons too, I said that, you know, okay, I'm willing to take a year off provided I can, you know, defer my admittance and, you know, not have to worry about applying to medical school, you know, ever again, for you to start your first year of business school. And then I'll come with you and I can get a job, and, you know, we'll just live in Charlottesville, and then I can just start next year. And so that is what we ended up doing. Yes.
That's awesome. What has medical school been like so far? I'm wondering, you know, for people like me and for listeners who aren't familiar with that day-to-day life, what does your typical day look like?
It's definitely, I would say med school is the single most challenging, probably the single most challenging work environment period that I've ever been a part of. There's a reason that there's no such thing as part-time med school. I know you can get like law and business degrees like on nights and weekends, and, you know, you just don't do that in medicine. It's for the first, you know, year and a half, 2 years, it's nothing but, you know, it's nothing but lectures. You know, you're literally being just talked at for hours and hours and hours, and it's an unbelievable amount of information. I mean, it's so much stuff that they tell you right off the bat, you're never going to know everything, because that's impossible. You're just not going to know everything. Most medical schools, GW included, it's pass fail, and it's pass fail for a reason. It's because you won't know everything. It's because you just need to do your best and kind of, move on. So for the first year I did, so I will say this though. This is kind of a ridiculous point to me, but I also think it's also illustrative of just like how crazy it can be. Most of our lectures are actually not even mandatory. They stream them online essentially. And so they're just kind of always available. And so a lot of people, don't even choose to physically be present because it's just easier to stay home and, kind of learn the lecture material on your own. Because they recognize that we want you to learn this material however you can, because you're going to be tested on it and you just have to know it. So a lot of people, again, aren't even physically present. You're just at home kind of watching these lectures or listening to these lectures like over and over and over again, trying to absorb this material. And then you study for, a very, very long time. And on top of that, we also have a lot of the times we do have to be physically present. It's a lot of professional development. We do a lot of case studies here. And then we do a lot of clinical apprenticeship, which is prior to rotations, which start, in the third year. It's kind of, we shadow, like every student is assigned to a doctor. And so once every week or a couple weeks, we shadow our preceptor. And so we're kind of, if you've ever been treated at a teaching hospital, we're kind of that awkward med student who's like hanging out in the back of the room, just kind of like watching what's going on. So I feel like we're either in the course of any given day, it's like you're either in class, you're at home studying, or, you're kind of with your preceptor, doing some kind of practical learning. I just finished preclinicals like on Thursday. So that's pretty exciting. But starting in March, that's when rotations start. So rotations, that's much more of what I think people think of when they think of med school, is you literally just rotate through every department and you have much more, contact with patients, and you're actually, sort of treating patients as part of a patient care team with residents and attendings as well. So you rotate through like, surgery, medicine, peds, OB, psych, whatever. And that's what you do, basically until you graduate.
It is, I'm wondering, like, just in terms of sheer hours each week, like what time do you get started, and like what time do you go to bed, and do you work on the weekends? I'm always interested in that lifestyle component as well.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, and this is, I don't know, what I tell people is, every day is a work day. It just is. And I feel like, and maybe this might, I don't know what this says about me, but I feel like part of this is kind of maybe me being a little bit older, and the fact that, I do have a family, and I really do make sure I have time for family time. But, any given day, any given weekday, I'll get up, probably, I get up early, I go to the gym with my husband, and then he goes to work. I'll probably study from, let's call it like 7:30 to noon. I'll take lunch or whatever, take a break, and then I'll study until 7 or 8 at night, and then my day is over. And, of course, if there are places I need to be, like at the hospital or whatever during the day, that'll happen, through the course of the day. But I mean, weekdays are certainly very long days. Weekends, I always studied. And I always try to, especially if I don't have an exam coming up, like I really try to take at least one day on the weekends to not do any work. That doesn't always happen. But on the weekends, like on good weekends, I'll probably work, half of the day on Saturday and Sunday. So for me, I feel like there's all, what I tell people is, it's, it doesn't matter where you are and kind of like the exam cycle is there's always something that you need to, there's always something you need to be studying. And there's kind of this, I don't know, and a lot of med students sort of, we sort of complain about this, but it's like, whenever I'm not studying, I know that I should be.
And guilt, like really, that ever-present guilt, yeah.
Exactly. And I mean, it's very, work-life balance is very, very challenging. And that's something that I've definitely struggled with a lot. And I'm told that, you know, I mean, I know residency is going to be the same way, but hopefully I'm told rotations are a little bit better in that respect. So I'm looking forward to that. But yeah, it's a very rigorous schedule. And I do have classmates who have, you know, who have children and, you know, who are also married and stuff. And you know, I guess it's one of those things, like, you know, if you have families and you have obligations, you certainly make it work. But I mean, there are also people who I'm pretty sure, like, just don't sleep. So, I mean, it is a very intimidating schedule.
Well, on the one hand, I'm just feeling incredibly confident the next time I go to see my doctor, of just knowing how incredibly rigorous this program is and how much of a crucible experience it is.
You should. Yeah.
But it's also, I mean, I can just imagine that not only are you around other incredibly bright, driven people, but there's also, I imagine, the sense that, like, you're learning something that's going to make the difference in someone's life or death situation. And so on top of the normal competitive environment in an academic institution, you've also got this tremendous, public responsibility hanging over your head. And I imagine that's just a lot of pressure to have constantly over you.
It is. And isn't it scary? I definitely think that a lot of us feel that way. And I think a lot of med schools, GW included, are doing a much better job of sort of exposing us to the clinical environment early for that reason, is they don't want us to feel like, you know, we get to residency and we're seeing patients for the first time. And it's like, oh my gosh, we have to make these decisions that may or may not be right. And that we're not, you know, and we're not confident in ourselves when we're actually around patients and stuff. And so I think we're really encouraged to work together for that reason. We're really kind of, they teach us really, it's kind of like the army in the sense that we're taught very early on to kind of check your ego at the door. Like, you know, there's no such thing as a stupid question, because holding back a stupid question could kill somebody. So it is very collaborative, and they really kind of emphasize the need to, you know, to kind of like lean on your team, lean on your classmates. And so so that we can at least begin to build that sense of confidence before we graduate. But I think medicine is probably one of those professions where I really don't believe that anybody is truly like 100% confident in anything they're doing. It's because medicine is like, it's such a, there's some things that are just so complicated and ambiguous, and I mean, it is very, like, it's very, very challenging, and literally any medical problem is a challenge. And I think that's also part of the reason that a lot of us like doing it too. So I mean, that kind of works. I don't know.
What about the age difference? Because I'm imagining that, I don't know, I would guess that probably at least half of the people there went straight from undergrad into med school. So I'm wondering, you know, where do you fit in terms of age? Like, are you about like 5 years behind the average person there? And what is that like, having had so much more life experience, that, you know, especially in the military, you know, like, I just imagine you have so much more life experience than so many of your peers, and what that dynamic is like.
That's a very good point. So when I started medical school, I was 28 years old. The average age of my class at that point was 23. Like, the average was 23. There is a cohort of us that, you know, that are older, at this point. It's those of us that are like, you know, 30 and older. We, like, I don't know, we all know who each other are. There's really not very many people. I have about 180 people in my class, and I'd say maybe there's like, I don't know, 20, 25 people who are maybe like, again, 28 or older at this point. Medical schools, despite the fact that I think a lot of schools are trying to admit more non-traditional students, older students, because, you know, they do appreciate that life experience does make better doctors, and really does bring a lot to the table. It's hard to get older people, you know, sort of interested in the track, I think, because the educational pipeline is so long. Because it's 4 years of school, it's 3 to 7 years of residency, and only then do you actually start, like, you know, making money. And the schedule is pretty, you know, the schedule is rough. And I mean, you know, as we were, you know, as I mentioned before, like, it's not, this isn't like, oh, I'm going back to school on nights and weekends. It's like, no, this is going to be your life. And you really are kind of putting your life on hold to do this for, you know, like a decade or more. I think being older, I do appreciate it. I think, overall, I really do. I think it's allowed me, more than anything else, I think it's allowed me to kind of prioritize what is and is not important in my life. And I think that I've done a much better job, than some of my younger classmates, of kind of going after that work-life balance and really, you know, I mean, I have a family at home, and I mean, I think sort of knowing that I need to, you know, give them the time of day has also been good, you know, been good for my mental health too. Like, it gives me that, you know, that time away from school that I personally need to, you know, in the grand scheme of things, just do better. It's also, I mean, it's interesting too, because I mean, I think people are always very interested to, you know, to hear, like, kind of perspective that I may have on things. I mean, I think anybody who's, you know, whether it's the military or not, if anybody has, you know, spent time, you know, in life, like, not in school, because I mean, the vast majority of my class has, you know, these are people who have literally never not been in school. So, you know, they've never had to, you know, have a job, you know, and support the, you know, and solely support themselves, or, like, you know, live by themselves or pay rent, or, you know, I mean, you know, or, you know, things like that. I mean, they know how to be a student, and they're extremely good at being students, but, you know, there's an entire world of perspective that they just don't have. And I think that, being able to at least, you know, hear that from, you know, myself and, you know, and others who do have, you know, who have at least, you know, taken any amount of time off and, you know, kind of had to be, you know, like grown-ups for a little while, is, you know, is certainly helpful for them. You know, and it's helpful for everybody, because, I mean, it gives you, just, like, you know, unique experiences of all kinds, kind of give you unique perspectives on any kind of problem. And I think because medicine is so centered on the patient and centered on people, having kind of different perspectives of the world is really critical to, you know, to adequate treatment of that patient. I think also, though, it's frustrating, because it can be frustrating because, you know, I mean, again, a lot of medicine and a lot of medical school is, you know, is teamwork and it's collaboration. And I think it's very easy to feel like you're not being heard and you're not being understood, and that sort of, you know, the consensus in the room is something that, you know, it's like, guys, this doesn't make sense. Like, I can tell you 100 reasons why I just, you know, I don't understand why you would do this, you know, or, you know, why I know that this is, or why I feel like this isn't working. But it's like, because you're so outnumbered, it's kind of, you just kind of have to close your mouth sometimes and let things happen. So, I mean, yeah, so the age difference, you know, it's definitely a challenge, but I mean, I think in the grand scheme of things, I think that, you know, having older medical students is very necessary to the future of medicine, you know, for a variety of reasons. And I mean, most of it is just because we really do bring a lot of different perspective to the table.
And what does your road look like from here? So you're in your second year of med school. You talked about the rotation starting soon. I'm just curious, like, what the next couple of years look like, and which field do you think you'll go into at this point?
Okay, so like I mentioned, I just finished my preclinical curriculum on Thursday, so a few days ago. I'm getting ready to start studying for our first board exam, which is, it's called USMLE Step 1. It's kind of like the first gate through med school. So you take it, you know, it's a 280 question standardized test over the course of, it's an 8-hour test. And you have to pass it to basically continue through medical school, and it's the score that, you know, residencies use, you know, to see how competitive you are, et cetera. So I'm taking that in February. And after that, I'll do rotation. I'll start rotations. And then rotations will continue for 2 years. And I graduate in May of 2019. And I will start residency somewhere. As I mentioned before, I mean, I am doing the National Health Service course, so I have to go into a primary care field, which actually worked out really well because that's what I wanted to do in the first place. Right now, I think I'm leaning towards family medicine. I love the idea of, you know, kind of a field where you literally get to learn. You have to know just a little bit of everything. I mean, it's like I could, you know, in the same day, I could deliver a baby in the morning and then like take care of its grandmother like that afternoon. So, I mean, I just love, I don't know, I love the idea of such a, you know, such a wide breadth of knowledge and kind of experience like that. And I mean, I really, really enjoy working directly with patients and kind of, you know, just talking to people and meeting people and treating people directly. So I know I want to go into like, you know, kind of a very office-based setting. So that's kind of where I'm leaning at, where I'm leaning right now. I'm told that I will probably change my mind 100 times throughout the course of rotation, depending on, you know, how I'm feeling that day and how, you know, how I'm enjoying the experience. So we'll see. I don't have to decide until my fourth year, because that's when we finally do apply for residencies, and we can apply for as many as we want, and then, you know, an interview, and then hopefully pick what is the best fit. So we'll see.
Wow. Well, I always like to keep the last question just open-ended, because I know I've asked a lot of really specific questions, but I'm sure there's a lot more you have to say. And so knowing that you have an audience of veterans and active duty military personnel listening, what final words of wisdom would you want to leave them with? It could be about personal or professional life, but would love to just give you room to share whatever else is on your mind right now.
What I think, I have a couple things. One is that, you know, if medicine is something that you think you really want to do, I think it's worth exploring. Medicine, kind of like the military, it's one of these fields where no matter what you're doing, you know, you're changing people's lives, and you are going to make a difference. And I think that if this is what you want to do, you should go for it. And I think there's a lot of reasons that people don't. And a lot of it is, you know, maybe it's financial, maybe it's, you know, the length of the education. But I mean, it's like, if you want to go into medicine, maybe, and, you know, maybe you don't want to go to school for 10 more years, it's like, you know, you can still, there's still nursing, there's being, you know, you can be a PA or a nurse practitioner, or, I mean, there's so many different directions you can go. And so, I mean, I definitely don't want to just preach like, oh, being a doctor is the only, you know, it's the only way to go, because it's not. And also, you know, if you do want to, you know, leave the Army and, you know, or the service in general, and if medical school is something you want to do, definitely, if you can, find somebody else who has gone through the process, or make sure you can sort of make a roadmap for yourself. Do not do what I did and literally it literally felt like I was just going month to month, and kind of, I felt like I was learning something new about the process every single day. And it shouldn't have been that way. I should have known, you know, I should have gone into it knowing what I was doing, because I would have saved myself so much stress and heartache and just like gray hair. I mean, it's crazy. But so if anybody gets anything out of me talking about my experience, it's that, you know, there are many, many routes to medical school, and they aren't necessarily, you know, difficult to achieve. You just have to sort of be organized, and you have to come up with a plan, and, you know, but you can get there, and you can get there, as you know, and you can get there pretty quickly, actually. So, I mean, even if you don't, like I said, if you're like me and you're not even a science major, I mean, you know, you may have to do a little bit of extra coursework, but I mean, there are ways to do that. I mean, and then, you know, or the, you know, the financial route, like medical school is very expensive, but there are certainly many ways around that too. So I think, again, I think, you know, sort of going for what you really want to do, especially if it's a field that makes a difference to so many people, you know, it's always going to be worth it.
Awesome. Well, Camilla, I really appreciate your taking time. I know how busy you are and how crazy it is with your schedule. So I appreciate you taking an hour to speak with me and the Beyond the Uniform community. And I just really think your story is extremely encouraging and uplifting to see, you know, from this unexpected departure from the Army and then scrambling to find one of the most competitive medical school programs in the country. And I know that there's a lot of people listening who can learn from that example and can take comfort in knowing that through, you know, determination and through setting their eyes on something that might seem impossible, they really can push through and achieve that. So thank you for that example. And thank you for just having a really candid conversation with me and our listeners.
No, absolutely. And thank you for taking the time to talk to me. So.
Surface.
Thanks for listening. Three important notes before you go. First, Audible.com is offering a free audiobook for Beyond the Uniform listeners. I love Audible. I get 3 books a month, and it's a great way to use net, or no extra time, to polish off books while you run, drive, etc. If you go to beyonduniform.io/books, you'll not only find this offer, but you'll also find a list of every single book that has been recommended on this show. One in particular I'd recommend is The Hard Thing About Hard Things. This is a great story of determination and also a glimpse at what startups are really like. That's at beyonduniform.io/books. Second, there are so many great resources out there for veterans, it can be difficult to know all about them. That's why at beyonduniform.io/directory, you'll find a list of every single resource that's been mentioned on the show or that I've been able to find. You can also add your own if you find one I've missed. Lastly, I've put together several different free ebooks that provide data for veterans about their civilian career possibilities. This quantitative information serves as a great complement to the qualitative interviews I do each week. Go to beyonduniform.io, click on resources, and you'll be all set. Have a great week, and I'll be back next week with more interviews with military veterans about their civilian career.